The following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Pataka Swami on September 16, 1997 in Bangalore, India. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 5, Verse 4.
Ekadasur Rat Putram Ankam Aropya Pandava Papracha Katyatang Vatsa Manyate Sadhu Yat Bhavan Ekadasur Rat Putram Ankam Aropya Pandava Papracha Katyatang Vatsa Manyate Sadhu Yat Bhavan.
Thank you. Maharajis and Kumaris, translation somewhere? Somebody can ask. Simultaneous translation, like United Nations. My dear King Yudhisthira, once upon a time, the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, said, Hiranyakashipu took his son Prahlad on his lap and very affectionately inquired, "My dear son, please let me know what you think is the best of all the subjects you have studied from your teachers." Report by Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu did not ask his young son anything that would be very difficult for him to answer. Instead, he gave the boy a chance to speak plainly about whatever he thought might be best. Prahlad Maharaj, of course, being a perfect devotee, knew everything and could say what the best part of life is. In the Vedas, it is said, "Yasmin vigate sarvam evang vigatang bhavati." If one properly understands God, he can understand any subject matter very nicely. Sometimes we have to challenge big scientists and philosophers, but by the grace of Krishna we emerge successful. It is impossible, practically speaking, for ordinary men to challenge scientists or philosophers concerning genuine knowledge. But a devotee can challenge them because the best of everything is known to a devotee by the grace of Krishna, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:11. Teshaṁ evānukam pārthaṁ ahaṁ agyānayam jam tamaha nināsayāṁ yātma bhāvasto jñāna dīpena bhāsvatā. Krishna, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart as the super soul, dissipates all the ignorance from the heart of a devotee. As a special favor, he enlightens the devotee with all knowledge by putting before him the torch of light. Prahlad Maharaj therefore knew the best of knowledge. And when his father inquired from him, Prahlad gave him that knowledge. Prahlad Maharaj was able to solve the most difficult parts of problems because of his advanced Krishna consciousness. Therefore he replied as follows. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport, the 7th canto, 5th chapter, 4th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. In the previous verse, it explains Prahlad certainly heard and recited the topics of politics and economics taught by the teachers, but he understood that political philosophy involves considering someone a friend and someone else an enemy, and thus he did not like it. So we can see here Hiranyakashipu, he wants to hear from Prahlad what he's learning at school. Common thing for a father to ask his son, "What are you learning at school?" Right? But he asked him, what's the best thing you're learning? So Prahlad, being very sincere and honest, the best thing he learned was what he learned from Narada Muni, which was about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and devotional service. So that wasn't in a normal curriculum of Hiranyakashipu's Gurukul. His thing was political science, how to defeat your enemy, and economics, how to make more money. Notice that in a modern educational system, the syllabus of Hiranyakashipu is basically the syllabus which we have today. And the same things that he prohibited, you know, discussing spiritual science and religiosity and things like that, has been more or less taken out from the educational system. Hiranyakashipu would be very pleased. In fact, we might give a special, like, certified by Hiranyakashipu. So now if people want to get this other knowledge, they have to get it from their homes, from the temple, from the Bhakta Vrindas. You know, and maybe somehow we're slipping in the back door by the Krishna test. We can go and after hours we can teach them to prepare for the Krishna test. We still doing that? Somehow. Or Gita tests, Gita camps. Actually, the children should learn about God from, you know, people should learn from God from their very childhood. Even a child can understand these things. It's not so difficult. And then, if they understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything else becomes very easy to figure out. I have many students tell me that there's have no time to chant, no time to read the Bhagavad Gita because they're busy with their studies. And we get them to take rest early and get up early and study in the morning and chant a few rounds, 3-4 rounds before studying and read a few verses of Bhagavad Gita. Then they find they're able to actually get much better marks in their school and college and university. So, in fact, was it 2 years ago in Hyderabad, one person stood up, gave a speech. Were you there? That there was that one student stood up and he became the valedictorian, got the number first mark in the whole citywide exams because he went, but that time he went to the Gita camp in Hyderabad. He went back, took the test and was first without studying. So he said, because of this, I am a believer. Of course he had studied before, but somehow, sometimes even we study at the time of the test, the mind may also go blank, right? So, Krishna, who is situated at the core of everyone's heart as the super soul, dissipates all the ignorance in the heart of a devotee. As a special favor, he enlightens the devotee with all knowledge by putting before him the torch of light. So we take shelter of Krishna, that he can reveal everything to us. That's his very special mercy. The darkness of ignorance. How do you get rid of darkness? It's like sometimes you think about, wow, it's so dark here. How do we get rid of this darkness? But all you need to do is turn on the light. And darkness goes. Darkness is the absence of light. So people say, I have no way I can chant. I can't do it. I have so many problems. It's like, I have so much darkness. I have no room for light. But once you turn the light on, then there's no more darkness. Problems are solved. Or the darkness may be in a few corners, a few shadows are there, not very significant things. So we need to get people to turn on the light. We see here, you know, how Hiranyakashipu puts his son on his lap. He affectionately inquires, my dear boy, best of our family, tell me what's, you know, your study. You know, so my affectionate father, right? Who would think that such an affectionate father would do the things that Hiranyakashipu later did? All because of this consciousness of friend and enemy. Prahlad has become contaminated by the enemy. The devotees of God. As a self-respecting asura, anyone who believes in God is our enemy. We will kill him to the death. My dear boy, have you learned about killing those devotees? So much affection, right? And that's what we're having in the world, it is so much affection for your particular friends and so much hatred for the enemy. Now how can you have peace on earth, right? If everybody is divided into friends and enemies. That's why there's no peace on this earth. Because everybody's thinking that he's my friend, he's my enemy. I'm against my enemy's against me. But that's the difference between devotees. A devotee, even if he's an enemy, someone who wants to do harm, still the devotee wants to help that person. That person could also be a devotee, give up his enmity. So devotee doesn't create enmities. Dhruva Maharaj, when he got older and he was a kshatriya, a king, he got into a whole fight with the yakshas. And it got out of control. So then he was advised by his elders, his siksha gurus, not to escalate the thing so much. It was becoming more than it was any practical use. So then Dhruva stopped. For self-defense, for protection, there are certain things that a devotee has the right to do. But when it goes too far, when it becomes enemy and friend consciousness, then it's not conducive for the devotees. So in this world, we've created nationalism. But nationalism doesn't, that just defines, okay, this is, all the people in this nation are supposed to be your friends. And all the people in the next nation, they're your enemies. Like Prabhupada said, usually the neighbor nation's your enemy, the one on the other side's your friend. So Britain, by dividing and partitioning India, creates two enemies. This is the way that politics works. In South America, you have Peru and Ecuador enemies. But on the other side, Peru and Colombia, the next, they're friends. Peru and Chile are enemies, they're neighbors. But Peru and Argentina, they're friends. Argentina and Chile's enemy. Common enemy means friends, right? So now the whole world is bewildered because before it was very easy, right? You had Russia and America. So, okay, everybody with Russia, they're enemies of those with America and vice versa. So it was pretty easy for politics. Politics was a simple matter. And now, no Cold War. Russia has given up overtly the communism. So it's very bewildering for politicians. Who's the enemy and who's the friend? You know, it's like it makes politics is so easy when you have very defined. This is your enemy, this is your friend. And so it's a whole new thing. Everybody should be a friend. It's very easy in their policy against Iraq. Okay, Iraq, the enemy for America. But for India, Iraq's not an enemy so much. No big problem. So in the world, if you want to have a whole world that's peaceful, you can't follow Hiranyakashipu's system. You have to follow Prahlad's system. The only way to have a world in peace is when people realize there's all one God and we respect everyone who believes in one God and who worship and who respect everybody who's cooperative with the order of God, you know, whether they believe or not. At least they should cooperate with His order. That's a real spiritual kind of secularism, which is not atheistic. Prabhupada said the government should see that everybody follows their religion. If somebody's a Christian, they should follow. If they're a Hindu, they should follow. Their particular, whatever religion they are, then they should see that, especially the preachers follow. Let everybody follow what religion they follow. But religion should be promoted, because religion is what brings out the finer qualities in people. If people actually have God consciousness, then so they, all things are revealed to them. Now what's happening, instead of God consciousness, we have our sect consciousness, our religion consciousness. I may never read the Bible, I never ever read the Vedas, I may never read the Quran, I may not know anything about those particular scriptures, but I'll identify, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, and whatever I am, the others are my enemies. That was the kind of thing that was created during the partition in India. But Prabhupada said that before, it wasn't like that, that people in India, for thousands of years, even during the Mughal rule, it was only a few of the Mughal rulers, I think Aurangzeb and a few that were really heavy. But there were some very good ones who were pretty tolerant. Akbar. During a Muslim festival, even the Hindus would attend. It's a social event. Like we see all the politicians do in the newspapers every time there's Iftar. But it was just a general, when there's a Hindu festival, Muslims might attend. It wasn't like so much of a issue. But then divide and rule tactics were used in India, and then everything became polarized. Like in the Middle East, so many Hindus are there working from India. Arabs don't have any particular enmity against the Hindus. It's only the Pakistanis and the Indian Muslims that ever object when we do Harinam. How to change that? It's going to be a big hurdle. And then for politicians, it's easy. It's something good for them, because then you have all these enemies and friend blocks. You can play one against the other and get some vote banks. So we're not directly involved with politics, but we want to see a peaceful situation for the people. And these are all obstacles for us, because what we want to do is create an environment where people actually learn to love each other, to respect each other by loving God, by loving Krishna. If they want to call Krishna by another name, alright, as long as it means Krishna, in whatever language they want to chant. This was the broad vision of Srila Prabhupada. Within a Krishna conscious movement, and we should be so much focused on all of the devotees. In other words, it's not that the devotees are friends and everybody's an enemy. The devotees are very close friends and relatives, and others are innocent people that we want to make our friends. Right? Except there may be a few demons who we don't have anything against them, but they're against us. So we have to be careful that if we get too close to them, they may try to harm us, that's all. So, especially within the devotees' society, we have to watch out for this contamination of Kali. This is Kali's main thing, friends and enemies, right? Quarrel always happens by creating enmity. Husband and wife are supposed to be the closest friends, work together cooperatively. Somehow, age of quarrel creates some difference of opinion, making an issue, people fight with each other, and suddenly the husband thinks that my wife is my enemy, the wife thinks my husband is my enemy, and there's some problems. Brothers and brothers, in the fourth canto it mentions, in the Puranjana forest, that if somebody cheats you, if somebody gets cheated for a farthing, it says in the Sanskrit for a kodi, one of those conch shells, kodi. If for some kodis they get cheated, then the person that cheats them becomes enemy for life. You have cheated me. And everybody cheats. A little bit here and there. And it's very hard. The nature of conditioned soul is to make mistakes, to be illusioned, to, imperfect senses and cheating propensity. I was seeing at one of the hundis there was no lock. In South Africa,
It's a really nice glass hundi with all kinds of brass things and that kind of like in a little glass coming and the thing money goes, you can see how much is there you put in. And they found that the Darwan was taking a clothes hanger, you know, this wire clothes hangers, opening up and he was fishing, poking the clothes hanger in the bill so it sticks in, pulling it out from the top. Somehow somebody in the middle of the night when he's guarding and he's fishing from the hundi, somehow somebody got up one night and caught him just by Krishna's arrangement. So Prabhupada told the story that he had a servant and he would always send a servant to do the shopping because there's no time to go, you know, but so he knew basically what the things cost. He knew that the servant was taking a little bit. But when he took too much, then he'd get heavy. What's going on here? Then, you know, calculating, and then the servant, you know, after that, then he'd be more careful, you know. So Prabhupada was saying that servant means takes a little bit. Yesterday my servant drank my bottle of water. I was asking, where's the water? And then he came with some other water. It had a funny taste. Twice filtered. No, but there was a bottle of... Then later he wrote me a letter. I thought he didn't want it anymore, so I drank. I'm sorry. So that tendency is there. So in Kali Yuga then we had to take precaution not to make it, you know, not to invite that cheating propensity of anybody. Keep the honest people honest. But unless it's, you know, really out of hand, you know, not that we want to promote cheating, but, you know, we try to cure the person of the disease. There's a famous story about one disciple who was a thief, and then he got initiated, and he couldn't sleep. He couldn't because he was just so habituated to stealing. So then what he did would get up in the night and he'd take people's clothes and put this clothes over there and this person's over there and then go back to sleep. Just to have that rasa like stealing, you know, but... We hope you don't have, you know, too many... Different kinds of people become devotees, but we want to protect Krishna's things, you know. See that nobody takes. But even when they do, it's not like one time. Because it's bad for them, if people are habitually stealing from Krishna, there's no use of them staying in a temple, they're just going to go to hell. What's the use, right? Even we take something from Krishna, we go, well, Krishna, okay, you take that. We get that material benefit, we don't get love for Krishna. What we really want is to develop love for Krishna. So then when we take it, that someone who really becomes Krishna, they say, Krishna's interest is my interest, so they won't take anything from Krishna. They want to use everything for Krishna. Like Madhavendra Puri, this principle that we don't taste something before it's offered to Krishna, it all belongs to Krishna. When he saw the kheer being taken to be offered to kheer, the Gopinath deity at Rimuna, and he could smell the kheer going by and he thought, wow, something that belonged to the Lord. So then he felt so fallen that the whole night he didn't eat. He just stayed up and was chanting. But actually his desire was totally pure. It wasn't like he wanted to taste it because of some lusty desire. He wanted to taste it to make an offering for his deity up to Gopal. So Gopinath then stole one pot of kheer and kept it. It's a famous story everyone knows. And then Pujari got a dream in the night to take the pot of kheer and give it to Madhavendra Puri. He's in the marketplace chanting. The Pujari got up, took his bath, went into Pujari room, and sure enough, there was one pot of kheer behind the cloth of Gopinath. said, the deity Gopinath has stolen Kheer for his devotee. After that, he became known as Kheerchur Gopinath. Then he went calling out for Madhavendrapuri. And Madhavendrapuri was there, told him what happened. You're the most fortunate person in the entire world, in the whole universe. For you, Krishna has stolen this Kheer. So Madhavendrapuri is showing how they have pure attitude, that he did everything he wanted to do it for the pleasure of the Lord. So that's the attitude we want to develop. Even within our society, as we have so many different gurus and so many devotees who are there, of course maybe in certain places there's predominance of one kind is because one relationships build up. Some places there's maybe many gurus passing through this, so there's many gurus, disciples. But the point is that just like when we had the opening, there were so many gurus came here and different disciples of different gurus from Bombay, from different places they came. And they all said how they felt very much at home here in Bangalore. And this is the point, you know, just because you're the disciple of another guru who's also dedicated to following Prabhupada, does that mean I shouldn't love you? We love all the Vaishnavas. One may feel a personal responsibility to help their god brother or god sister, but we should also feel a responsibility to help all devotees, just like we want to help innocent people who have no guru yet. Because you have no guru, does that mean I won't give you mercy? So in a Vaishnava society, you can actually have this freedom from friends and enemies. It may be closest friend, something like that. But everyone's friend. And that's the wonderful mood that Prabhupada is established in ISKCON. But sometimes I feel, you know, we still have a long way to go to fully develop that. Even within the community, Kali is so expert to try to create divisions. You know, the temple inmates with the temple congregation, or the young with the old, or the married and the unmarried, or any of the Tamils and the Kanagis, the educated and uneducated, or something. You know, they always try to create any kind of division. This is Kali's sport. And as devotees, we had to be division breakers and unifiers, to keep everybody united together. Prahlad, he just told all the sons of the demons, just all chant Hare Krishna together. No divisions, right? Everybody has their own responsibilities, their own role, their own particular duties in their ashram, but there's a unity in diversity. The diversity we can see, that doesn't take too much to see. It's pretty easy to see diversity. But how to create the unity within the diversity? By having the love and appreciation of all the devotees. By loving Krishna. When we understand Krishna and we love Krishna, then it's easy to love the devotees, isn't it? So as Bangalore grows, we hope in the future we'll have, you know, now they had the national games and built these stadiums, we saw them lying empty, so in the future we'll have so many devotees that will have to take the stadium sometime and fill it up for chanting Hare Krishna. But we want that everybody remains friends. So the vrindas are where the opportunity for the congregation to associate and in the temple to have. We have our ishtagostis and ways that devotees can be associate. Naturally, some will be closer to some devotees, will have personal relationship with some. We can feel a solidarity and a relationship in a broader sense, a loving family feeling with everyone. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any question? This one point comes to mind, this as a PI, whatever. We always see how said that Although a materialist may have all good qualities, but because of their lack of devotion, in the end it all becomes useless. Where a devotee, even they have some defect, maybe a great defect, but because of their devotion, in the end everything is made all right. We see Hiranyakashipu was such a nice, loving father, but in the end, because of not being a devotee, everything gets lost. So we want a happy world, just get everyone to be devotees. And that's normally very difficult. But by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we get people to chant Hare Krishna, then and chant the names of Panchatattva, then gradually their hearts change and they become devotees. Even demoniac people can become devotees. Any question about class? Yes? How can we understand that? Well, not so difficult. If we are all serving the same divine interest, if we are all loving the spiritual master, the founder Acharya, Krishna, and we're serving, someone may be serving in one way, someone may serve in another way. Someone may be working in the ashram, someone may be helping from outside. But everyone is working for the same purpose. So in that way, the common goal, the common purpose is the unity, which is accepted and acknowledged through love and trusting. The diversity is that the different devotees are doing different things. They may be living in different ashrams or living in different circumstances. So the diversity is external and the unity is internal. And maybe, it's like here, there's a total cooperation. On Sunday I heard so many devotees from temple and congregation alike. They're all manning different book tables and preaching areas and so on. So there's a unity, everyone's serving together. At the same time, the diversity that somebody's living with their family, somebody's living in the ashram, somebody's a brahmachari, somebody's a kumari.
Diversity of interest.
If there's a diversity of interest. Yeah, if you have a common interest, then you can have unity. If you have a totally contradictory interests, I said, because of God consciousness, everybody can unite on God. But when there's no God consciousness, then it's very hard to have any unity. The materialists try to have unity by sense gratification. But then it creates friends and enemies. Because by the very nature of the material world, if there's 100 people here, I take 1 rupee from each of the 100, we each all have 100 rupees, then I get 200 rupees, 199, and everybody else has 99. So then I become twice as rich as everybody else. Then everybody gets envious why he has more than me. So in material life, this is always difficult to create because of a different interest. But if we see, like in a varnashram, in a daiva varnashram society, the Vaishya was making money, but he was using that money instead of trying to centralize and having a big bureaucracy in the government which doesn't really do much for anybody except tax everybody. The Vedic system was small government, charitable people. Socially, civically responsible people with a lean government. No more than 25% taxation, and the only ones to be taxed would be landowners and vaishyas. Employees weren't taxed, brahmanas weren't taxed, and the kshatriyas were taxing, so there was no question about them taxing. So the tax was limited, Not like, you know, sometime, you know, some huge tax you gotta pay 90% of your income. Who's gonna pay? That's crazy. Created a black market in India, right? Now they're offering you declare your undisclosed income and you pay 30% tax and live in peace, right? I don't know how far it's working, but at least it's coming to something more reasonable. But when in that Daiva Varnashram society, when the Kshatriyas were spending the tax money to do works for the people and having festivals and having reserve for when there's drought or famine and feeding, and the Vaishyas, they would give profusely in charity. So the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas were giving charity to the Brahmanas, who are also giving charity and doing service for the whole society. The Sudras, the workers, were so well taken care of, they didn't need any charity. They were working and getting everything they needed. And everybody was being uplifted to go to a... You know, that's the theory anyway. It happened in time of Ramchandra. And now we don't want to identify people so much as being this caste or that caste, but rather how to socially organize society. The secret of Varnashram is Sang Siddhing Hari Toshanam. Everything should be done for the pleasure of Hari. Then you can have a unity in the diversity. Ultimately, that unity comes by serving God. Even somebody wants that material, has the material desire, they want to, but to some extent they're cooperating with the overall plan of things and they're in moderation, then you can still have the unity and diversity. When somebody is hoarding, when they're creating scarcity for others to take illegitimate gain, that's when the government was supposed to come in and stop that. You know, but now sometimes you hear the politicians say, you're taking illegitimate gain. It's very bad. Give me bribe, then I won't say anything. That's not the purpose of the government. So people are feeling frustrated sometimes. Why? The same one. Well, that was the problem we were facing in that opening. I had 18 or 20 gurus and Prabhupada disciples here. And how to give everybody a service. Because if I only gave half service, the other half would feel that we wanted to also do something. And how to give all the other visiting devotees a service. So we created so many new kinds of service so everybody could do. Conch blowing, Ganga sprinkling. Ladies kirtan, men's kirtan, everything that scripture mentioned, ringing bell, Brahma Samhita, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, so on. So that way we could give, and then carrying the kalash, doing the abhishek. So somehow everybody got a service, more or less, what I heard. And that's why everybody felt happy. So we want to. That's where the management has to always see that everybody gets a chance to serve. If there's too much bottlenecking and not enough service, then that shouldn't be a problem. Then we should figure out how to create more services, keep everybody engaged. That's why the Bhakta Vrindas are important, because at some point it's difficult to keep everybody engaged, so that allows unlimited people to be engaged. You can just go on having more and more bhakta vrindas. So at least some service everybody's getting in a congregation. And then in the temple, at a certain point you actually run out of services. You know, we have not reached that point. But then what do? Then if you have so many people, then you can think of doing more things. Festivals. That's how some big temples, they have daily festival. In Guruvayur, they have procession 3 times a day. Right? Some days 5 times. But 3 times minimum. Now we are having procession on Radhastami and Janmastami and a few times. When we get more and more devotees, we may go on increasing. Something for everyone to do. So, that's where the management, the leaders need to always use their intelligence, how to make Krishna conscious a challenge and how to make it interesting. Prabhupada raised this same point. He said that there were so many sons of a father trying to massage the back of the father. They said, no, I want to massage this part. No, I want that part. No, me. They start smashing the father. Ah, you're killing me. So I hope there's no fist fight over the fan. And then you have to have 2 fans. 4 fans. Pretty soon everybody will be fanning, right? But that's not the only service. There may be other services. You know. So that's where you... So then sometimes they do... In some temples, they have marathon before I come. For 1 week. Who wins the marathon gets to bathe the feet of the guru. On the arrival day, someone gets to pour, someone gets to take the towel... So then they do that way. Temple leaders getting everyone to work a little extra for the preaching. And then, because when the guru is there anyway, things slow down sometimes for a couple of days in some places. So there's different techniques you can use. I have a meeting today. I have to go to the other place. It's very late. Are you having any other ceremony here? Well, this is a good topic. We can go on talking. You want to discuss this more tonight?